Whenever you're ready, Tom.
Sorry, I'm down the wrong way right before we started. The next motion we have on behalf of the committee is motion 10. The motion as amended reads, to include as option 4 in section 4.2.2.2, to include 1. Giving the RA authority to make transboundary quota trades either with or only with the entities that will be trading their quota. And number 2, whichever entities, e.g. MRI, groundfish sector, provide the quota for transboundary trading should benefit from the quota given in trade from Canada. That motion passed 4-0 with one abstention.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Committee discussion. Mary Beth, Mike.
I could use a little bit of more explanation about what this actually means. Transboundary quota trades either with or only with the entities that will be trading their quota. What is that? Both parts, I'm not quite sure, but we could start with that.
Tom.
Yeah, and again, I unfortunately wasn't at this meeting. The issue came up briefly at the prior committee meeting, and there was concerns expressed by several committee members that any trade of groundfish quota to Canada would result in groundfish quota coming back to the groundfish fishery, and that, you know, at least there would be options considered that wouldn't trade away groundfish quota to Canada for, say, yellowtail quota that would then be divided among the various components of that fishery, both the groundfish fishery, scallops, and perhaps others. So I think this was a second option included by the committee for consideration in the framework.
Yeah, Mary Beth.
I'm sorry. I'm still a little confused by it, how that would function. I mean, my thinking on this had been if a trade were to take place that we would be looking at the total ACL, a trade would come off the top, and then the distribution to the particular entities would occur in a certain way. Is that consistent with this or not? Does this mean something different than that?
My understanding is, and I'll defer perhaps to Jamie to explain the committee's discussion at their most recent meeting. This is adding an alternative to an alternative that's already in the framework, which is the straightforward sort of allocation of any fish coming in as we allocate fish, say yellowtail, between the groundfish fishery and the scallop fishery. I think this is adding an alternative saying if we're trading away haddock, for instance, that you know, from the groundfish fishery, that those entities or those components of the fishery that traded that quota away would receive any Canadian quota that was traded back.
Mitch? Yeah, I would just like to add that as this option refers to entities at the sector or even individual level, it's probably more appropriate for an amendment action rather than the framework action that's referring to trading quota overall at the quota level. So as it moves away from that, it's sort of a new concept that may be more appropriate as an amendment.
Just to that point, Mr. Chairman, as I understand the alternative, it's giving the regional administrator authority to make trades. I think that's the thrust of this. I think there are several ways that you could bound that authority or make suggestions, but I think that's frameworkable.
Well, as I understand it, it's giving the RA the authority to make trades as individuals or sectors are providing to the RA some kind of an amount that he can trade, and that really hasn't been that's really not the subject of what was before this, the other options.
Maybe it would be better if we started with, I think, the concerns that were raised by the committee and by a number of people in the industry, and that is that the stock that the Canadians are most interested in trading is actually codfish. They're incredibly constrained on that stock. So the idea is, well, we are also constrained in some parts by codfish, or certainly could be, that we would trade away codfish from effectively the groundfish fishery, receive yellowtail, but that yellowtail, those opportunities would then be divided up between the groundfish fishery and the scallop fishery. And I think the concern was that we should include an alternative that any fish that came back from a trade of groundfish quota should go to the groundfish fishery. And again, I'd ask Jamie if there's something I'm missing from that conversation at our last groundfish committee meeting.
Jamie.
So I think this motion is certainly about what Tom has described, but it's also about communication. This was partly, supported by the GAP because they felt that any kind of trading that was going to go on should have industry involvement. And they were concerned how the framework language reads now, that there wasn't explicit recognition that communication needs to occur. So that's part of the reason why that part one is in here. And again, part two as it was described, was about fairness. If you give something, you should get something. I think that the purpose in the framework is to, right now, is to establish an approach where the regional administrator could adjust the quotas. I think this motion might be getting more into the process. I think that's later on, and not necessarily something that we were thinking for the framework. But at the same time, these are some of the industry's concerns, that they are interested in trading, but there needs to be communication and fairness.
And I do want to add to Jamie's point that, to repeat what I said yesterday, the TMGC is going to be having a conference call the first week of October, and one of the agenda items is the trading process. And it's we don't have one yet. So, Mike, then Dr. Pierce.
I'm also looking for clarification. It says trades either with or only with. Are those two different options, or is it both? Can that be clarified?
Jamie?
We asked the committee to clarify that, and this was their clarification.
Okay, so it's not clear. In addition to that, I'm not sure who these entities are. Are we talking about entities on the U.S. side, meaning, you know, U.S. license holders, or are these entities in Canada? And I think there's a huge difference between the two. For one thing, I don't think it would be appropriate for a U.S. government official to be dealing with individuals in Canada, but...
For clarification, it was U.S. Tom.
I guess I'm struggling a little bit, just trying to figure out where we're going here with this particular action in relation to what the council's working on. I think in June, Sarah Heil gave a presentation to the council about a proposed process for working out trades, and it was really kind of a multi-step process where she suggested a way forward to effect a trade this year, which would rely in part on some authority that the regional administrator, we think, has. And then it was going to suggest a relatively minor change in Framework 51, which was the ability of the RA to modify the quotas in season, which was really an attempt to make this, again, work, a relatively simple way to work next year. Expecting that at the same time the council would adopt a priority that would deal with a lot of these issues to work on what at the time I think was expected to be an amendment. And it seems like now we're trying to mush together the approach of using a framework and using an amendment. And I'm just a little concerned given the legal advice that we got from Mitch about that.
David.
Yeah, I agree with one of the previous comments about the reference to MRI. You know, this is not trading between individuals. These are not individual tradable quotas, although they are. In actuality, they're not, supposedly. So that's got to be modified. In addition, it seems like this motion, which I did support at the committee level, but now after going over it again, I'm not so sure I would support it, because it sounds like the regional administrator is going to be a broker for fishermen. In particular, one sector could approach the regional administrator and say, we want to trade some fish, and so John or a member of his staff then figure out how to do that. I'd appreciate John's perspective on this, because it seems rather complicated. It seems rather specific. It's a U.S. quota, and you're granted someone's going to be giving up a sector will be giving up a part of their ACE, let's say, in exchange for getting an increase in their ACE for something else, maybe cod. But so the description is confusing. I don't really understand how this would work, or in the context of a U.S. quota, some of a U.S. quota being traded to the Canadians. They give us some of their national quota, and then it's specifically allocated by John to some group in the U.S., some sector specifically. So it seems unworkable. It seems complex. It seems like it might be illegal, and some individuals would scream that it was just patently unfair.
John?
Well, if I'm understanding that what we're talking about now is not about this year, right? So I think what I want to make clear about what we're trying to do this year, because who knows about future years. This year is on a very fast track. And if it's successful this year, I know when I talk to my counterpart in Canada, her intention is that we should try and get this going as something that can be done in many years. But we're under pressure to do it this year. And this year, what we've talked about is a trade, yellowtail and haddock. And this year, this seems to me, nothing is easy, of course, but this seems to me a trade where they would be giving up yellowtail that they have not caught once their year is completed. That is relatively easy for them to give us yellowtail once their season is completed, fairly easy for them to do. In exchange, we would be giving up haddock that we're just never going to catch. I think last year we caught 5%. So that's relatively easy for us to do. They're giving up yellowtail that they have not caught after their season for haddock that we're not going to catch. That is, ought to be a relatively easy trade to make. And because our years don't coincide time-wise, theirs is a calendar year, ours is a May 1st year, we would receive the yellowtail before we would give up the haddock. And so this year it would be a question if we can, I don't want to use the word rush, but if we can adhere to the schedule that we have put before you, that Sarah laid out, we would be able to apply what we receive in the, I got this right, the 2013 year when we really need it. That's why it's really important to keep this time frame.
And so we would have some amount of yellowtail when we really need it. Then it would be up to the council when you want to take this yellowtail. Do you want it all to go to groundfish? Do you want to spread it between groundfish and scallops? What do you want to do? That would be something we would consult with you about. The first task is to get the trade completed so that we'd have the yellowtail. Then apportioning it is something we can spend some time discussing. How would we want to do that? I would not do that unilaterally. But the trade, the first year, would be, I think, relatively easy because of the reasons I've just said. But I think what's up here is if we're successful in year one and we want to get into a regular basis of doing it year after year, then how would we go about it? I do think from discussions we've had that in subsequent years, this may be a lot harder to do, primarily because I think the yellowtail for them may be much, much harder for them to give up. And so I hope this doesn't become an academic exercise, but it may be much harder for them to want to trade the yellowtail that we will need.
Mary Beth, and then Tom.
So the detail that's in this particular motion is troubling to me in that it predetermines that apportionment of whatever trade would occur. And while I understand the concept and why people might support this, I think any trades that occur need to be in the best interest of the nation. And predetermining who benefits from that is, to me, problematic. I think that it ties our hands on making choices in a way which might not benefit anybody. And if this said, that we give the authority to the regional administrator who requires consultation with the council or the industry or something in more general terms like that, I could support it. And I do understand that this is just an additional alternative in the document, but I don't think I can support the motion as written.
Tom.
Thanks. I think the committee worked hard on this, but it might the motion might benefit from some simplification. So with that, I'd move to amend to include an option 4 in section 4.2.2.2 to give the RA authority to make transboundary trades of groundfish quota only with components of the fishery trading away their quota. Additionally, any groundfish quota resulting from a trade with Canada should only go to the groundfish fishery. If I get a second, I'll provide a rationale building off of what Mary Beth just finished saying.
I think we've got to let Karen catch up with you.
Okay. I can send it to.
And while that's happening, I'm going to read you all a portion of an email I got from my counterpoint on the TMGC. And we discussed a pilot trade for yellowtail and GOMAC today. There was support but not unanimous for a mutually beneficial trade. We discussed the terms of a trade, but these were not finalized, subject to further industry consultation. We should be able to present a clear Canadian response on whether a trade is possible, and if so, on what terms, on the TMGC call the first week of November. And I just read this in to the record to follow up on John's comments about his work on the steering committee. Jamie.
I'm not sure if this motion is necessary. It's already an option in the document under option number 3. If this option is adopted, the regional administrator would be allowed to adjust the U.S.-Canada quotas during the fishing year after allocations were made. Additional quota will be distributed consistent with the sector sub-ECL distributed. Prior to changing measures, the National Marine Fisheries Service would consult with the council and would advise the council what measures were under consideration. And under the rationale, the last sentence, this distribution scheme would consider traded quota as additional groundfish quota that contributes to ACE.
Okay, Tom, is that your motion?
Yes, it is.
Is there a second? Second by Terry.
Like I said, I think Mary Beth alluded to, there is an option in the document. I absolutely agree with John Bullard. We should be moving forward, if possible, in the short term. But if we are going to set this up as a system that, or an option that we'll use, a mechanism we'll use in the future, then I think we should consider both ways of how we would divide up any resulting quota from the Canadians. The option in the document, as I understand it, and Jamie can correct me, but the option we discussed as being in the document would allocate Canadian quota between the two subcomponents of our fishery, the groundfish and the scallop fishery, along the existing allocation percentages. This would include an option that we could at least consider before final action. I would say if the groundfish fishery is trading away quota, the groundfish fishery is going to get the quota back. I think that makes sense. I think at least it should be considered.
Mary Beth.
So I just, sorry, I'm still really not quite clear. In the document, I mean, there is an option that would allow movement of national quota trades between two countries. That's fine. This, however, would assume that we would allocate out the sub-ACLs, and then once those are allocated, that those components of the fishery could then trade their quota. So it's very, very different way of looking at it. And I think I still have issues with supporting this motion.
Tom?
To that point, I actually don't think that this motion implies that at all. It could be handled at the ACL level, but the groundfish fishery, which is going to be trading away quota, would receive the benefit. Now, it doesn't need to be at the level of ACE or sector. It could still be at the level, if desired, it could still be at the level of the fishery. But it's the groundfish fishery which is trading its quota away. Maybe you know, maybe there's other confusion on that, but I think that could, this motion doesn't ensure or preclude handling at the ACL level of the groundfish fishery.
Terry.
So there was discussion at the groundfish committee of them doing this a couple of different ways. One way is to do it after the year starts and take away the allocation from the sectors and make the trade. The other way to do it was take it off the top and never allocate it to the sectors and do it previous till before the year begins. So I think this option just covers either way, and there's another option in there that does it the way you were thinking, Mary Beth, and a option that covered the concerns of the people in the audience at the Groundfish Committee.
Further council discussion. Jackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just quickly reporting back on what the GAP had discussed, the groundfish advisors, last week. We had a lengthy discussion about this provision. And although the framework is focusing on providing the RA with the authority to make in-season adjustments, we had a lot of questions about process. And on good process and good communications with those individuals who, you know, the allocation of a given stock would be impacted by the decision. So we had a very lengthy discussion about that, and we didn't have the decision documents of you know, the discussions that have taken place on how trading would occur. We didn't have those in front of us. But the GAP had passed a motion which the groundfish committee had adopted in the form that you saw before, and then this is a perfection to it. But the groundfish advisors recommended, you know, giving the RA the authority to make transboundary quota trades either with or only with the entities that will be trading their quota. And that's because when we have discussions about trading haddock, obviously you're going to be trading haddock away from groundfish entities, and then you're then for the purpose in this case of receiving yellowtail, then the yellowtail received should be given to those people who also had haddock taken away from them. So that's the kind of discussion we had. We also said whichever entities provide the quota for transboundary trading should benefit from the quota given in trade from Canada. And then we had also recommended, which is separate from this, but hopefully will be discussed at a later point, is that a mechanism needs to be created to allow trading between the groundfish and the scallop fisheries. So that was an additional provision that we had recommended. So we would be in support of this motion to amend or the motion before.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Back to the council. George.
Yes. I guess we're not clear how this differs from the option three that's already in the document. Can you explain how it is, if it is, please?
Tom.
I think this is more prescriptive than the option in the document as I read it. The option in the document says after the fact, the RA will come back and we'll talk with the council after the trade has been made about how we will allocate these things. I see Sarah's shaking her head no, and maybe given her familiarity with this topic, I think it's worthwhile. I don't want to duplicate the thing, but I think this option is a little bit more prescriptive on the front end about how to bound those transactions.
Any additional comment? Okay, seeing none, those who support the motion to amend on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 13-1-2. We're back to the main motion as amended. Those who support the main motion as amended, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those abstaining? The main motion carries 13-1-2. Tom.
The next motion on behalf of the committee, move that we remove option two for retention from consideration at this time, but will be included in the next available groundfish action. That passed 3-1 with one abstention.
Committee motion?
I think this was in response to concerns raised at this meeting by the agency. So maybe it would be worthwhile to allow them to express those here.
It's a committee motion that doesn't need a second. Are there any comments from the council? George.
Just one clarification, maybe. When you say the next available groundfish action, I assume you really mean the next groundfish action that would be under development when the technology is at the point where we can actually implement that. Is that your intent?
Yeah,
not necessarily the next one, if the technology isn't developed to the point where it can be implemented then.
Speaking on behalf of the committee, I think the intent was for the next appropriate groundfish action, and maybe that word change alone will allow you to address your concerns. Speaking individually, I continue to be pretty frustrated that we can't do full retention until we do electronic monitoring. We can't do implement electronic monitoring until we do full retention. I think we'll probably, for the purposes of this motion, the next appropriate groundfish action would cover the concerns by the service.
Are there any other comments from the council? Any comments? Gib.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. We share the frustration of the committee chair on this one. Oceana supports the development and consideration of full retention. For years, we've had concerns about monitoring and administering this fishery with catch monitoring and quota monitoring, and the lack of accuracy and precision that's attached to the catch monitoring that's going on in this fishery right now with at-sea monitoring. We see the combination of full retention and electronic monitoring as a promising way to move forward on this, something that's sustainable, that the industry can afford, that we're not going to be relying on agency funding, angel funding that's come through at the last minute, the last couple of years, at whatever level of funding is available from the agency. Moving forward with electronic monitoring and full retention is something that we see as a sustainable approach for this fishery for the long term. So it's disappointing that this isn't moving forward, at least for some parts of the groundfish fishery. There are case studies of electronic monitoring around the world for some gear types where it is appropriate, and we were hopeful that this was going to be able to move forward for at least parts of the groundfish fishery for 2013. For 2014, and to see it cut off right now is disappointing. With that being said, we hope that this will move forward as quickly as possible and that we can get something in place for 2015. Following up on that, and I think that this is the only place that this is going to come in, is we continue to have real concerns about catch monitoring going forward in this fishery. What the plan is for 2014 isn't very clear. At this point last year on Framework 48, there were some discussions about how we were going to move forward. And right now, other than the changes in the monitoring goals and objectives that went through in Framework 48, which are questionable to say the least, there hasn't been any discussion at the council about what's going to happen in 2014. And the default measure goes back to industry funding. And I think that the council needs to start as soon as possible, and it may be a little bit too late to start having these conversations, but start thinking about a plan for 2014 and how we're going to get accurate and precise catch information to monitor the sector fishery. Because right now it's not working. There's too much, there's bias in the sampling. You're not achieving even the precision goals, and it's having an effect. The assumed discard rate is flawed and not giving us the performance that I think the industry wants and the stakeholders want. So we need to start looking forward to 2014 and coming up with a plan for the fishery to make it work. The sector fishery is very complicated and very data intensive, but we need to start looking forward to that instead of hoping that federal funding is going to come through, because that is anything but certain right now. So thanks very much, and we appreciate the time.
Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. We've supported full retention in the past. We continue to support it and are very disappointed that this is being taken off the table. Thank you.
Are there any further comments from the audience? David.
Yeah, at the committee meeting, I suggested that with full retention, the states would have to do away with their minimum size possession, their minimum size limits for all groundfish, and that would be a tough sell, especially since each state has its own state commission or council that would not likely be that would not welcome that suggestion. So. I indicated at the committee meeting that since the full retention is still on the table, and if this motion passes, will be considered at the next appropriate groundfish action. It would be very useful for the states to get together, either through ASMFC or on their own, the New England states, for example, to discuss what we would do. And if indeed full retention was adopted as the strategy affecting the groundfish fishery, we need to address that. The states do. We need to address that earlier rather than later.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. 14. And those who oppose? Motion carries 14-2-0. Tom?
The next motion, penultimate motion, I think, from the committee on this is to ask the council to ask the SSC to reconsider the ABC of GOM Haddock. That passed 4-0-1.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Terry?
So the SSC met and tried to consider a mixing ratio. Couldn't come up with a mixing ratio, but did think that if the fishing industry is seeing more haddock, then maybe the ABC and OFL were set wrong in the first place, according to the SSC report. So Taryn has a slide. And I just want to show you the numbers from our sector, how our discards have increased and our catches increased this year on Gulf of Maine haddock. So our catches have remained steady since 2010, and we're not seeing any decrease in landings. Our discards are increasing every year. And I don't even know if I can even read what that number is. For the 2000, you can see it for the 2010 fishing year, the percentages, how it increases. Last year, from 2011 to 2012, it's increased 16 times, the discard rate has. And this year here, I haddock catches for May and June have been 41,000 and 19,900 pounds. And if you take May and June from the previous 2 years, we were catching like 6,000, 5,100, 8,300, and 7,000. So, I mean, the catch is increasing in Gulf of Maine. And I think the SSC was right when they thought that they should maybe take time to reconsider and I do have all the information from all the other sectors except for the Cape Cod sector, and the only reason I don't have theirs is because they don't fish in the Gulf of Maine, so they didn't have any information to give me. But I do have all the coalition sectors, the Midco fisherman sector, and I'm going to turn that information over to the PDT when they try to consider it. And they're all, everybody's increasing at the same rate, so it's not just us. Just our sector. It's everybody in the ground fish fishery.
Russ.
Terry, it'd be really useful for me if you could sort of characterize the size composition of those discards. What size fish are we talking about?
I do not have that information, Russ. I didn't do anything in the months of July because the size had dropped down, so I didn't know what that would do. I didn't want to distort the data from, you know, the previous years in comparison. I do not have that information. I'm sure the PDT can get that information, or I can get it somehow. I'm sure you have it somewhere in the database, but I do not have it.
We likely may have some information from observed trips. I was just curious if you knew offhand. So. Yeah.
Further council discussion? Tom? Audience, any comments from the audience? Dave.
Actually, more a question for perhaps the PDT. Is there any data available yet on this year's recreational haddock catch? The reason I ask is from at least the boats in my harbor, the indication was an absolutely phenomenal April, May, and June on large haddock, and then a rather rapid switch to an equally phenomenal amount of sublegal haddock. which has continued pretty much all summer. Discards running 35 to 1, something like that. So that would indicate to me that there's a very strong 2010-year class of haddock in the Gulf of Maine, which I've said at this council repeatedly since we had this discussion. That would be a place to look. I mean, the commercial fishery is so constrained that I'm not sure you can tell anything from it. But the recreational fishery is not constrained and has been catching a great deal of fish. But do we have observers ever in the recreational fishery? Does anybody actually put the same type of monitors we have on the charter and headboats and go out and verify this information? I think this has to be done because they're catching a lot of fish unless they're world-class liars. But usually the casket-class coolers don't lie.
Any further comments from the audience? Jackie.
I just want to follow up on the comment that Dave made because this has been discussed on the docks nonstop all summer, and then there is a desperate need to know what in real time the recreational catch is because it's been very difficult to explain to the groundfish fishermen who are going out of business why they're sitting at the dock when there are a lot of when the recreational fishery is having a great year on haddock. So it's very difficult to explain this to the commercial fishermen, and it would be a huge would be very unfortunate if we couldn't at least be getting data from that to have a better understanding of where the Gulf of Maine haddock assessment really does stand. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Mike.
I guess I'd be interested in a view from the center about this statement that the SSC made. I'm looking at the report, and it basically says that maybe something's happened since the last assessment update in 2010. And I'm curious whether there is any information as reflected in surveys or whatever that would lead one to expect that if the SSC revisited this, there'd be some different outcome. I don't see any point in referring something back to the SSC if we have no reason to expect that there's going to be information that would allow the result to be different. So I'm looking to be educated a bit on that.
Paul.
Yeah, I think this statement came up during the haddock spillover discussion. The PDT did some scenarios assuming different spillover from one stock to the other, from Georges Bank to the Gulf of Maine stock. We also did a scenario where we changed the T+1 estimate from the assessment. The direct estimate suggested a higher 2010 year class. What was used during the update was the geomean estimate, which was lower. And we also looked at what has happened since the assessment, and there was some suggestion in the surveys that perhaps there's a higher year class for 2010, tracking through the surveys.
Thank you. Further counsel? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, well, it makes sense to have the SSC reconsider the ABC in the context of this year class, and perhaps there is more out there than what we think. At first, I thought this was specific to the spillover, and basically we're asking the SSC to revisit the spillover issue. I don't think it is. I think it goes well beyond the spillover issue. It's about the actual Gulf of Maine haddock, not Georges Bank haddock, spilling into the Gulf of Maine. So I think we have enough new information, or we suspect there's some new information to warrant this particular reconsideration, since if indeed a great deal more haddock are going to be available in the Gulf of Maine, the many sectors will be at risk and could be shut down, dramatically impacted by that unexpected availability. So this makes sense.
Tom.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Jamie and Paul a couple perhaps leading questions. I guess I think the SSC's recommendation, the specific language of the recommendation, is that if there's a concern that the ABC is wrong, then the assessment should be updated. I don't think the recommendation says just revisit the ABC. It says the assessment should be updated. I guess my question is, what's the ability of the PDT to update a full Gulf of Maine haddock assessment sometime between now and the November council meeting?
I was wondering that myself. I don't think it's PDT's job to update the Gulf of Maine haddock assessment. I was wondering actually what the PDT could do with this, you know, this question. The PDT, I assume, would be stuck with the latest assessment on the stock and would have to work off that assessment. And I'm not even sure what the rules are regarding the T+1 estimate, because that's something that comes out of the last peer review. I don't know if the PDT has the if the PDT can change that assumption from the assessment.
Tom.
So trying to push this a little further, let's assume that the PDT could modify the T+1 assessment estimate for a minute. T+1 is the, 2011 year class?
2010.
Okay. I mean, how much effect is that likely to have on an ABC in 2014? Is that going to be significant in haddock? Or?
Yeah, that's in the spillover document. I think it was a 100 tons increase for 2013, right?
You mean when you experiment with that T+1 number, you wind up with an increase of about a – when you modify that T+1 number, if you do, you wind up with an increase on the order of 100 tons? Okay.
Additional comment, Jim?
yeah, following up on the train of thought that if the SSC is asked to do something that the PDT is asked to do, the Science Center is likely to be indirectly asked for an assessment update. Now, we're already planning to do updates through the operational assessment process of the New England groundfish, the 20 stocks, sometime in 2014. But this really gets into a question of priorities, because we have a lot of assessments already on our plate and others for 2014 that are loosely scheduled within that year but not on a particular month. So we would have to have a discussion, I think, within the NRCC about our ability and priorities to schedule something like this if it turns into a request for an assessment update.
Further comment? Seeing none. Chris.
Yeah, I just want to say that Tom characterized the SSC's recommendation or advice correctly, and that they recommended that the proper way to handle this is through an assessment update. So if you send this back to the SSC, they're probably, and I hate to, you know, guess what they're going to do, will tell you that they're not in a position to update the assessment or just not, you know, give you the type of response you want. I mean, I don't want to say you shouldn't.
Terry.
So what should we be asking for? I'm looking at the SSC notes here, and it says this might be due to a recent increase since the terminal year of the last assessment update, 2010. So should we be asking for an update from – can we ask for an update from the Science Center? I don't think they're at our beck and call, I don't think. But can we ask them?
Tom?
Well, you can ask for anything, right? But my expectation is that we would be unlikely to get an updated assessment in time for it to be considered in November. I frankly doubt whether we'd get an updated assessment update in time to be considered by 1 May. So I think with that in mind, I think the choices you have is don't do anything, which the council's probably not very receptive to. And then the other possible option is you go ahead with this motion, but you recognize that what's going to happen is the PDT is basically going to only be able to project forward from the last assessment, bring in survey information that we may have that was not considered at the last assessment, add in catch information for the actual catches rather than the projected catches, and run that forward. I don't know how the SSC is going to respond to that. They may or may not have enough confidence in that information to recommend an increase in the ABC. But my expectation just, you know, would be that if they did accept it and increase the ABC, that the increase would likely be relatively modest. Now, you know, this could be a situation where any increase at all is good. But I just want to try and temper expectations about the work that can be done and then what might happen. My other concern is I say the work that might be done, and I'm kind of operating in a vacuum here because there's a whole lot of other things the PDT is going to be working on between now and November to get that framework document done.
Laura.
I just had a question as to procedurally, if we didn't have new information by November and we're being asked to set actual numbers at the November council meeting, could we leave a placeholder in the document for the time until we can get sort of the process that Tom just described as sort of our best hope for some change to occur? Is that something that we can do, or maybe put a range of numbers in as opposed to the number that is currently being currently out there?
Tom.
So I can hear the thunder off in the distance. I actually don't like to say this. We have done that in the past. I have personally hated it, where we have taken in and put in a range in an ABC in a document. We've done that several times in the past. The reason I personally don't like it is that it makes it very difficult for the PDT to try and analyze what the impacts might be. And the way we did this for, I think, Gulf of Maine Cod twice is we said, and George's Yellowtail once, I believe, we put a range in the document, and then the decision was actually made later. The latest, I think, that we considered making it was the January council meeting, because then it had at least a chance of making it into the proposed rule for the fishing year. I don't know if the agency wants to comment on that. Again, you know, speaking from past experience, the PDT generally hates that option because it makes the document a lot more difficult to write, and it makes it harder to write, analyze the impacts, because you don't necessarily know what the catch is going to be.
Mike.
My reaction on this is that it does reflect a broad problem of not having frequent enough updates of assessments, which everybody has recognized, and the center has been doing various things to try to cope with that. But that's broadly the problem. And it's a problem that gets a lot of attention when people don't like the outcome. It's equally a problem when they do like the outcome and find out that later on it might have been too optimistic. So I think we need to keep our eye on the ball, which is fixing the real problem, and that is getting on with addressing the issue of frequency of assessments. And I think referring this back to the SSC with the add-on effects or knock-on effects that might affect the PDT as well as the center probably only diverts our attention from the bigger problem, so I would not support this motion.
Are there any additional comments? Terry.
So tomorrow under priorities, could we ask the center to initiate an update on the Gulf of Maine panic assessment and use Tom's backup plan as a temporary fix for this coming or this fishing year? Would that be a better strategy? Or
tomorrow's an initial discussion of the priorities, which we're going to set in November.
Okay, but that's for our priorities, not for the Science Center's priorities, right? Or
Tom?
Jim mentioned this briefly. The NRCC works with the science. The NRCC consists of the Mid-Atlantic, New England, ASMFC, Regional Office, and Science Center representatives. And we try to work. We meet twice a year. One of the big things we do is try and coordinate assessment scheduling. And we're trying to work on assessment timing for next year. And one of the big things we're wrestling with is trying to fit in assessment updates for the groundfish stocks. And I think it's nearly all of the groundfish stocks, right? That's what we're talking about. So we're already wrestling with that issue and trying to figure out timing. And, you know, the sticking point right now is the timing as to when that could be done. It would not be done in any case in time for the 2014 fishing year. And then the question is whether it's going to be done in time to influence the 2015 fishing year. And that's kind of what we're wrangling over right now. So I think that discussion is on track. And my fallback is the part that's not really on track.
Any further comments? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? Motion carries 13-2-1. Tom?
The final committee motion before our brief consensus statements is motion 13 to include as option 2 in section 4.2.5 to revisit the stratification of assumed discards for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. That motion passed the committee 5-0-0.
Committee motion that doesn't require a second. Are there any council comments? Are there any audience comments? Back to the council. Okay. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Tom.
So with that, that's the end of the committee motions. Before we move on to other council members' motions for the framework, I wanted to ask Karen to put up the Framework 51 consensus statements from the committee. I'll read through these. It's not clear to me that we'll need any action, but I wanted to put these in front of the council in case there was input before the committee continued on. So these are four consensus statements. First, the committee agreed by consensus to move forward with GONCOD and American Place rebuilding plans as currently proposed. The committee agreed by consensus to proceed with small mesh AMs as outlined and will incorporate advice from Whiting Advisory Panel. The committee agreed by consensus to include for consideration a measure that would distribute any additional quota consistent with the sector sub-ACL distribution. If trading groundfish quota, then examine an allocation scheme that considers it as additional groundfish quota that contributes to ACE. And finally, the committee agreed by consensus to remove Section 4.2.4, Haddock spillover, from Framework 51. As you can see, some of those issues are issues we've already discussed, debated, and acted on earlier today. But we did explicitly and by consensus remove the Haddock spillover alternative.
Are there any questions or discussion? Anything from the audience? Okay, Tom.
With that, the consensus statements.
Oh, wait a second. Jeff, you've got to stand up. You're back in that corner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wonder if the motion should also state that the squid AP be involved in the continuing discussion of the small mesh measures rather than just the whiting AP. Thank you. I'm Jeff Kalin from Lunds Fisheries, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think both APs should get together again like they did recently. Thank you.
This isn't a motion. It's their statements. But Jamie?
Well, Maybe the consensus statement upon further consideration could reflect the fact that the SQUID AP should be involved in that discussion, too. Thank you.
Jeremy?
This specific consensus statement was made at the first committee meeting in August, and it was at that time that we later discussed that it was important to have the SQUID AP involved, and they were involved in a later process. And last week when the committee met, they heard from both APs for the joint report.
Right.
Right. So this statement specifically came from the August meeting, but I understand your point about updating.
Yeah, and this morning I think I heard, that it ought to go back to the Whiting Committee, but certainly I'm sure it sounds like it's the council's intention that the SQUID Committee would be involved too, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Tom?
With that, only that Chairman Robbins is planning to follow up and make sure that the SQUID AP and industry members are aware of this process and are able to provide input, and we'll work with staff to make sure that there are opportunities for that. With that said, that's all the committee motions and consensus statements on this framework, so I think I'd turn it over to you for other council members for business within the framework before we go on to the amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, for a great pitch report. Appreciate it very much. Before we move on to Amendment 18, are there any other issues come specific to Framework 51? Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a motion on behalf of the SCOLLOP Committee, and Karen has got the motion up on the board, that recommend the Council include in Framework 51 zero retention for yellowtail flounder in the scallop fishery. So normally, I think we would probably have referred this to the Groundfish Committee, but timing of having all the meetings in the same week, and I bring that forward for the council consideration. And just a little rationale here. I can't recall exactly when we did this, but we included a requirement for retention of yellowtail in the scallop fishery because we felt it would provide for a better accounting of actual catch. And, however, this experiment has not really worked out the way we had hoped. The compliance within the fleet is not great, quite frankly, and we actually had a vessel that seemed to target yellowtail, which is, contrary to where we're trying to go. So we think that the best fix for this to continue to minimize yellowtail in the scallop fishery is to go back to zero retention.
The SCOLLOP Committee motion that does not need a second. Council discussion. Are there any comments from the audience? Gib.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. If the council decides to go forward with this, we encourage you to attach standards to the monitoring of the yellowtail cap for the scallop fishery, similar to what's in place for the sector fishery, to ensure that accurate and precise information is being collected. If you're going to monitor the bycatch cap and use it for management purposes, you need to have good information. The full retention, even though apparently compliance may be a reason, I see it as a flawed reason to do away with a regulation if people just aren't complying with it, you need to have the good information. Retaining these fish gives you another data stream about what's happening in the scallop fishery. And if you're going to do away with the retention policy, then you need to make sure that the information that's being used to monitor this cap is accurate and precise. So we'd encourage that if this moves forward, that be attached with this one. We want to make sure that this cap is being well enforced. Thanks.
Peter.
Good afternoon, Council. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Peter Hughes. I'm with Atlantic Cape Fisheries. This came up recently at the AP, and it came up more so at the committee where a motion was made during the committee meeting. We want to take away any incentive for scallop vessels to target yellowtail as a directed fishery, which we have seen in the past couple of years. That doesn't do the scallop fishery any good, nor does it do the ground fishery any good to have scallop boats out there fishing, beating up with their dredges a yellowtail flounder that they're getting 75 cents to a dollar for at the dock. Unfortunately, we've had a couple of skippers up and down the coast do just that. So we want to take away any incentive for any retention whatsoever for a scallop vessel. Thank you.
Are there any further comments from the audience? Back to the council. Tom.
I am a bit concerned about this motion, and I guess because I don't think the rationale has really changed from why we implemented this rule in the first place, which is we have incredible uncertainty that's driving problematic catch advice, and we wanted better information. And one way to get better information is to ensure that all those yellowtail come to the dock, and we have at least some catch information from this fishery. So I don't think that's changed. I think we could all look back. I can't remember which action this was included in, but I think the rationale was pretty solid. These yellowtail are coming up, and it's not onerous to collect them and land them. And the fact that some of the avoidance programs that we've heard an awful lot about and are doing good work aren't taking care of someone going out and targeting a buck a pound yellowtail on a scallop trip, I don't see the rationale for changing a rule because we've had such pitiful compliance with it. I think there's other ways to improve compliance. I mean, this rule made sense when we put it in. The fact that people aren't following it, I don't think is a great rationale for taking it out. In terms of one or two rogue captains, it seems like people know exactly who's landing yellowtail. Doesn't seem like that would be a difficult problem for a collaborative effort for a fishery-wide, a fishery with a problem to ratchet that back and take care of that. So I don't really see going to zero retention as fixing this problem, and I think our reasons for having them land that yellowtail and improve our catch estimates and understanding of what the resource is like, I think those are still valid today.
Laura.
Yeah, I guess Tom mentioned at the end what I was going to say is that it does concern me that how do we know then what was getting thrown overboard, and we've heard numerous testimony as to the depleted state of the stock. So we need to know, we need to have the maximum amount of information possible about the yellowtail that are being landed by any vessel. So this concerns me.
George.
Maybe this has been considered before. I don't remember, but would it make any sense to have a possession limit that would be high enough that it wouldn't impact the great majority of trips, but would essentially eliminate those few trips that somebody does go out and try to catch a lot?
I'm not going to go out to the audience. We're at almost 3 o'clock. We're not even to our 1 o'clock agenda item yet. We've had an open period for the audience to speak on this motion. Further council discussion. David.
When there are observers on board, we'll get some estimates of how much a yellowtail was caught and then discarded. So, to me, that's how we'll get that information. If a scalloper has yellowtail in possession and no observer on board, they can throw them over the side. No one's going to know anyway. So, to me, this makes sense. I support the motion.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not support this motion. It moves us in the exact wrong direction. We're trying to get full retention in the groundfish fishery. I agree with Laura and Tom. This stock is in sorry shape. We've been fighting about that all morning. This is just counterintuitive from my read. Thank you.
Any further council discussion? Terry and Chairman Robbins.
So I kind of do support the motion. After
what kind of mean?
Kind of. I could go either way. You heard that for 3 years. So, but with I like George's idea of having a small enough trip limit there so you're getting the catch information, and it's taking away the incentive for the scallop fishery. I mean, I think I'd like to hear a little bit more discussion about it, but make it small enough so nobody's going to target them, but you're getting catch information to calm everybody's nerves, I think. So maybe someone could amend that motion to make the trip limit small enough.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like the catch information that's come out of the out of that requirement hasn't been that beneficial or accurate. And, you know, you'd think that people would know better than to target the species within this fishery, given the fact that it is in poor condition and it's clearly a management priority for this council and a constraint on the scallop fishery. And yet it sounds like a handful of boats have targeted the species. So to the extent that there would be a marginal conservation benefit associated with the motion, I think it would be appropriate at least for consideration in the framework.
John?
I support the intention of the motion, which is to discourage people from landing yellowtail. My only problem is whether this actually achieves that result or not. And I guess I want to ask Russ on the record, we need information on yellowtail, and we get information from observers and we get information from landings. And the key thing, I think there are two key things in how I feel about this, and I'm not sure how to vote right now. One is what really provides the disincentive to land yellowtail. That's one question I have. And the other is what provides information for us to do the best science on yellowtail, something we spent a lot of time talking about this morning. How critical are the landings for the science? Because if we don't get the landings information, what kind of a hole does that leave? So, Russ, would you give me some help on the value of the landings?
Russ?
I think that, you know, the uncertainty in terms of the compliance rate, in other words, I don't think we have a clear handle on what proportion of scallop trips are actually landing what they're supposed to versus discarding, creates a big uncertainty in terms of how to utilize that data. And it makes us rely more on the observer data in terms of actually measuring what the bycatch rate is, you know, what portion of that is landed and what portion of that is discarded. So without really having a good handle on what the compliance rate is in the industry, it really does cause us to rely much more heavily on the observer data.
Mike?
It's hard to really form an opinion on this because there are counterbalancing issues. I mean, what I'm hearing and what I think is my understanding is, with or without this motion, with zero retention or requirement for full retention, basically what we're going to use for estimates or what the science is going to use for estimates is from the observer data. That's the bottom line. So while it's appealing to vote for one or the other because it's going to improve the data, I think the practical reality is we end up depending on the observer data in either case because we don't believe that if you require full retention, that there is, in fact, truly full retention. And if you require discarding, you're not going to believe the logbooks. You're going to need the observers anyway. So the data issue is about the same. So in one case, you have the philosophical viewpoint of minimizing waste by requiring full retention. And the other viewpoint that potentially by not allowing full retention, you may deal with a few operators who are potentially targeting and therefore hurting the whole industry. So I see it's hard to make a choice between these because there are legitimate arguments in both directions. I don't think data sways the case. Given that this has come forward and there are members of the industry that are supportive of it, I guess I'll support it. I'll support it on balance for that reason.
I just want to frame the discussion that this is an option. In Framework 51, we're not taking final action. Tom?
Yeah, and in light of that, I still oppose it as an option. I think this is just, at its core, a failure to communicate. You got a $500 million fishery, that a couple individuals don't recognize as being held effectively to a constraining bycatch stock, and they're going out and targeting that for, what, a couple thousand bucks? I mean, that's, we shouldn't change that by changing this rule. That's a terrible precedent. I mean, well, listen, the minimum sizes are whatever people would be able to live with. And if people aren't complying with that, then we'll change the minimum sizes to what would you rather? I mean, that's not right. This is just about ensuring that we have the incentives in place. If the scallop fishery and scallop fishermen aren't incentivized to avoid yellowtail because the AM will shut their fishery down, I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't think the response there is to change those rules. So I can't support it, and I guess if it passes, we'll continue to consider it. But I just don't think it sets a good precedent from just a straight-up rulemaking standpoint.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? The motion carries 10 to 6. BK.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion to put up. I think Karen has that. I'll wait till it gets up there. It's a little wordy.
You're not violating the rule, are you?
No, I don't believe so. If the font's correct. So you can read it. We'll keep it one a page and a half.
You're close.
All right, so I'll read the motion. The motion is to supplement the rebuilding programs for new plans implemented in Framework 51 with the following management objectives decision rules to guide management responses during the programs. If the fishery ACL for the stock has not been exceeded during the new rebuilding plan, and new information indicates the stock is below rebuilding trajectory, request that the PDT SSC provide the council with catch advice options that consider the following in priority order when F rebuild would fall below 75% FMSY absent this directive. A, to revise the rebuilding program to the full 10 years if a shorter time frame was initially adopted. B, to revise reference points to adjust for initial projections that are not playing out. And C, to provide F rebuild ACLs under each scenario, including status quo. And if I get a second, I can.
You second, Laura, second by Laura.
The rationale is the GAP and the Groundfish Committee agreed with the approach taken by the PDT that sets out to initiate the rebuilding plan so that F rebuild is above 75% FMSY and below the OFL to account for the uncertainties associated with the long-term projections in some of the models. In practice, this will initially limit fishing to 75% FMSY because the control rule is to fish at F rebuild or 75% FMSY or whichever is lower. Also, the SSC report urges a focus on controlling F and to de-emphasize the biomass. By providing these decision rules, the council will be guided to seek information from the PDT or SSC that will attempt to account for the weakness of long-term projections in some of the models. And keeping rebuilding F as close to the initial rebuilding plans, which or are above 75% FMSY. This could be used for the Gulf of Maine cod in place, and frankly other models as well. Basically, it's taking whatever the tools we already have and making things a little bit more flexible. Thank you.
Before we have further discussion, I just want to ask Mitch if this is passes the muster.
Well, it's still is the intent to be able to adjust the fishing mortality to ensure that rebuilding will occur during the time frame. I mean, I think it's still have some serious questions about that.
Yes, it still does allow for that. Mm-hmm.
George.
Yeah, I think there's some real problems with this, too. I'm not sure that I fully understand it, but a couple things that seem bothersome is that you could just revise reference points to adjust because things aren't going the way you thought they would. I think the reference points have to come out of new assessments, not just an arbitrary adjustment because things didn't work out. Adjusting the rebuilding program midway to a full 10 years, I think, also is at least is simply stated there is problematic. If you've determined that your rebuilding program time frame is adequate to get there and you're not getting there, then you should be adjusting, as we talked about this morning, you should be adjusting your F accordingly to try to get back on the trajectory, not just lengthening the time frame. So those are a couple things that just seem on their face anyway to be problems.
Rather than rule it out of order, I'm going to take some committee discussion. Laura.
I'm not sure I completely understand it either, and I have actually read it a couple times, but one thing that in past council meetings, we've had a lot of conversation about regime shift, whether it's happening or not happening, and things like predation. And there's a really good chance that we have reference points that stocks may never see. And so it just seems that perhaps this does provide some flexibility. And I understand that there could be legal concerns, but I definitely urge you to look at this with an open mind and perhaps some creative legal thinking so that the fishery can continue to operate and perhaps realize some of the new realities that are out there in the ocean prior to when these sort of high reference points were set for certain stocks that, quite honestly, we've never even seen before and were being asked to hit. So, again, I'm not sure I fully understand all of the repercussions of it, but it seems such a great step in the right direction to provide some reality to the hard structure, hard timelines of these plans. Thank you.
Further council discussion. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the same concerns that both Mitch and George have about this. We're playing around with rebuilding programs halfway through. We're changing reference points. This isn't the venue for that. We don't have these reference points need to be based upon stock assessments and science, not based upon management politics. It makes the legally required rebuilding tenets of Magnuson perhaps more flexible than would render them effective. I can't support this. I think this is a rehashing of the motion we saw earlier today, which, frankly, was untenable. So this is just another attempt to do the same thing, and PK, no offense, but I don't think this is legal.
Further council discussion. Mike.
Yeah, I think it's not very clear what it's really intended to do. There seems to be an implication that initially, F rebuild is above 75% FMSY, but somehow because rebuilding is lagging, it then falls below. But it's not explicit that that's the case. It seems to assume that's the case in terms of the wording of the first paragraph. So I'd I then wonder how applicable it is at all, because that isn't necessarily going to be the case. Beyond that, I also agree with the comments that would basically give the impression that we revise reference points because we don't like the way things are going. Reference points should be revisited whenever there's new information, but they should be revisited as a scientific process, not because of just we don't like the way the outcome is occurring. Thank you.
Dave.
David Gaethel, Hampton, New Hampshire. I'd reference the SSC report from yesterday, document number 4, in which it says, in basically supporting this type of idea, in analyzing rebuilding options, attention should be paid to metrics beyond solely biomass relative to BMSY. For example, stock structure, especially age composition, is an important attribute. For some stocks, reconsideration of the reference points might be warranted. It might also be important to consider rebuilding in the mixed stock context. For example, the council might not wish to speed up the rebuilding of cod, say, at the expense of limiting the catch of haddock or pollock. Finally, the PDT has recognized plans that focus on F rather than B appear to be more robust. However, legally, the 10-year rebuilding target remains an important constraint on those options. And that's why I think it is worded the way it is. It says right up there that, you know, we extend it out to the full years, 10 years. It doesn't say eliminate it. It says basically, the way I read it, if you're despite setting the appropriate F rate, as long as you haven't exceeded that F rate and biomass is still not responding, that you have to take a look at some other things. This is what I call the ecosystem component of management. I've been frustrated my entire time on the council, and now my short time in the audience, with the fact that we continue to try and do things the same way we've always done them and expect different results. This is an attempt to lay out a strategy. It's a catch advice strategy that lays out stepwise things that should be done when you're not meeting your estimates. And I think it's very important that we take a new train going forward here. The old one clearly isn't working. So I support this. I think this is a way to move forward. I think the SSC endorsed it yesterday. I asked Pat specifically when he was sitting right here next to me if he endorsed this concept, if the SSC did. My understanding, the answer was yes. So I think you have something here. You had problems legally with the motion you had this morning. I think this is worded quite differently from the motion this morning. And I think it satisfies the legal constraints. So I would urge you to pass it and hope that we can move on to a new way of doing business. Thank you.
Other comments from the audience? Jackie. Yeah, I'm going to ask you to be very brief because we need to move on. We haven't even got to Amendment 18 yet.
Okay, thanks. Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. So we support this motion. We feel that this isn't dictating a future council action or a future council response, that this is just more of a decision-making tree, if you will, for during the rebuilding plan, that the council and managers are closely watching what is actually occurring, and if things aren't occurring as had initially been intended, that there would be an opportunity for a review. So it's not changing option A or option B. It's just establishing a process for a review. So you would still be adopting, you know, Gulf of Maine cod, placed, or other stocks. You'd be continuing to adopt a rebuilding strategy for either 8 years or 10 years, but you would have this type of decision-making process for parameters down the road when the rebuilding plan gets underway.
Thank you, Jackie. Given the time, I'm going to make a suggestion to help move this along. Just consult it with Mitch, and should this motion move forward, the agency, the council will be able to review it before the next groundfish committee meeting, and the groundfish committee can then determine whether or not with that review determine whether or not it should be retained in the document. If it can't be reviewed, then it would be my hope that the Groundfish Committee would put it into the considered but rejected pile, but at least it will be you know, subject to a full review and further discussion. So I'm going to not accept any more council comments on the motion on the board and ask those who support it to please indicate so. And those opposed? The motion passes 9-7. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a different topic, clearly we're going to be moving on to scallops sometime today, and we think we are. And we're not far enough along in the specifications for 2014 to know what the need for yellowtail will be in 2014 on Georges Bank for the scallop fishery. We currently, in Framework 51, have consideration of 16% of whatever the total number is, and I guess we're at 400 for the total fishery on Georges Bank. And because we don't know what the number for the need will be, I was hoping there would be some flexibility in the framework so that when we come to decision-making in November that we have the opportunity to adjust that number if we think it's appropriate. So I think if, you know, it's sort of consensus around the table that we allow the PDT to look at what the need is, which I think they're likely to do anyway. I can make a motion if we need to have a motion, but I don't know. I guess I look to other members of the council on this.
I would prefer not to take any more time, and if there's no objection from the council to task the groundfish and the scallop PDTs to collaborate and report back to the groundfish committee meeting at which I believe is being scheduled in October. Is
wait, I think Jamie's got some questions.
Jamie has some questions. You need some guidance, but I mean, just I'm trying to move a concept forward so we don't debate this for another half hour.
So the issue is that the allocation number would be changing from 40% to 16%. And are you asking us to reconsider that number in the framework? I'm just trying to understand where this is going.
Mary Beth.
I think what could be ideal is if we understand what the need for the fishery is and if the information is in the document that the council has the ability to choose a number other than just the 16%. But we need to have it before us so that our hands aren't tied. If it's not an alternative that's available, I mean, just so that we have a range to choose from, that's all I was thinking of. The previous framework relative to this, I think, was we were at 90% of the need, and that could sort of bound the numbers a little bit, which I don't make no assumption that we're going to choose 90% of the need, but that the range of numbers is available to the council.
Tom.
So, assuming that the council wants this done, what if the range is lower than 16%? We consider that one as well?
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Okay.
I mean, we'd have to look at the range.
Terry.
Well, you know, I'm not against looking at it, but we already have a way to make that happen anyway between the fisheries, not, you know, right now, we can already put scallops towards them from the groundfish fishery and back and forth. So, I mean, I got no problems with them just looking at it, but I don't think I could vote to change the percentage.
Dee?
Thank you. I know you're interested in keeping us moving along, and the scallop PDT is planning to prepare that number, so you'll have that value, but it's very different, and we were going to do that for our analysis purposes of the alternatives in terms of potential impacts and other fisheries and bycatch issues, but not to serve as a source of information to revisit the percentage decision you just made. So I think you should be a slightly clearer if you're talking about that the framework might actually revisit that decision. So a little more clarity would be helpful.
Tom?
Well, I'll offer some clarity. I don't think we have any intent to reconsider that allocation. I certainly don't. And while I know those numbers are calculated for informative purposes for a number of management decisions, we haven't discussed immediately revisiting an allocation decision that we made last year. And I think we all like to reference where we were at whichever meeting, and I completely forget. But I remember it was a long one, and it was a long battle and a very contentious allocation decision. And I see no reason to immediately reconsider that, and that's nowhere in the framework document or in the priorities associated with the development of that document in terms of priority issues. So from my standpoint, I think we can collect the information as we were intending, but it's not in the framework document, and I don't think it's appropriate to reconsider allocation decisions before the ink's even dry.
Mary Beth.
So it was certainly not my intention that we change the 16% that we currently is in the plan. I think that that needs to, you know, that would be something totally different. That's not what I'm suggesting here at all. What I'm suggesting is that we have the opportunity to choose a different number one time if we decide it's appropriate. And I don't know if it's going to be appropriate or not, but I'm not suggesting that we revisit that allocation and just give us options. That's all.
Tom.
And just quickly to follow up, I guess, what's the value of making an allocation decision if occasionally, when it would suit one party or another, you go with a very different number? I would argue that's sort of the system we had before we decided to allocate these in the way that we have. So we'll see the numbers one way or the other. It sounds like they'll be collected, but at this time, I don't and can't support including a reallocation, whether we call it a reallocation or a one-time balloon payment to one component of the fishery. I think they come to the same thing.
So to wrap this up, is the council comfortable with the Ground Fish Committee looking at the numbers at their next meeting? Dr. Pierce.
Once again, I don't know what that means. We can look at the numbers, but what sort of action will that trigger? I agree that it would be inappropriate to change the allocation between the Scarlet Fleet and the Ground Fish Fleet. I had hoped to have dealt with that through the 400 versus a higher number, and we did not do that. So now we must live with the consequences of our previous decisions and not complicate matters dramatically by having a room full of people competing for whatever is available for yellowtail. Tom's quite correct. This was a long and tortured discussion at a previous meeting. We have the percent shares, and we need to live with those shares. We'll get some additional information from the Scarlet Plan Development Team relative to the likely consequences of that share versus the 400 metric tons, and then, you know, then history will be made.
So what's the will of the council? Terry.
Yeah, I think we should look at the numbers, but yeah, and I already think that we have a way to do it without putting it in here. But we're going to need the numbers anyway, so I think we should look at the numbers.
Sidebar. Just have a Tom. Is you're going to have the number, as you say, you're going to have the numbers anyhow. It's just what are you going to do with them, Jamie?
I'm hoping today to come away with knowing what's in this framework. If we don't know this until the end of next month, I don't know what you want us to do with it.
Tom.
Well, I'd say absent explicit action, there is no reallocation alternative in the framework, and it doesn't sound like we're going to do it by consensus. So absent a pass motion by this council to include that, I would continue to operate with the current allocation. And information is for informational purposes only, and people can talk about it as they will. But absent an explicit motion, we're not going to do this by consensus, it doesn't sound.
Okay. Is there any further business with Framework 51? Jamie, what other guidance do you need before you go bunker down?
So today we've talked about things that should be taken out, things that should be added. I just want to make sure that what's left is the council's intent that we move forward with what's left in Framework 51 as well. So what's included that hasn't been removed, just want to hear that.
I'm getting punchy. Do you have a specific question for the council?
Just as the document as it stands with the revisions today, my question is there's no additional changes, and everything that's included is what you intend to include, Framework 51.
Yes.
Thank you.
I get that concludes our discussion, our prolonged discussion on Framework 51. As usual, Amendment 18 has gotten the short end of the stick for committee attention, and we're going to be asking Rachel to turbo through her presentation so we can get on to scallops and monkfish. Rachel, do you need a couple minutes? Okay. Let's take a very short break.